check out beacons.ai/comicsfunprofit for all the C4 FAP links you could ever need, all in one place. You can provide feedback, listen, support, share, enjoy these. We have our Patreon there. You can buy us a beer or a coffee. You can check out our Instagrams, our Twitters, our Facebooks. Check out our YouTube page. You can email us. You can listen to our podcasts on Patreon, if you're a subscriber, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, on Podbean. We have Google Podcasts on there. We have an Amazon wish list. You want to buy Kyle and I something? Fine. You can do that here. We appreciate it. We have Kyle's RPG podcast listed on there, so you can check out his Dork Day Afternoon offerings. We have Cowabunga links, so you can check out the Cowabunga deep discount FOC and pre-order list. Get on that. That's RLCS, so you can check that out as well. And we want to just give you opportunities to say hi, to check out what we're doing, support us if you would like, or just listen. Check out beacons.ai/comicsfunprofit for all the C4 FAP links you could ever need. Thanks. Back to the show.
Aloha. It's Jason from Hawaii. Welcome to a special edition of the Comics for Fun and Profit podcast. In this episode, I will be interviewing a friend of the podcast, Joe Corallo. Now, he is here to promote his latest work, King Arthur and the Knights of Justice. Now, it's part of the Maverick imprint from Mad Cave Studios. This is a young adult original graphic novel that's going to come out on April 24th. Joe, welcome back to the Comics for Fun and Profit podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you very much. Now, listeners, I'm going to go over some of Joe's works. And I've told Joe, you know, to please feel free to correct me at any time. Now, Joe is an Eisner and GLAAD nominee. He is a Ringo Award winning editor. He has written a number of anthologies, including Archie's Jinx, Grim Fairy Tales, and Happy Horror Days. He is also he was also nominated for I'm going to try to pronounce it. Ingans. Not you're nominated
yeah,
for the
yeah Ingans the Award? Ignat with I had a story in an anthology dates Marge's Publishing's Dates Volume 3, which was nominated. Then.
Okay, all right, thank you very much. And then you were also a co-editor with another friend of the podcast, Eric Palicki, on Deadbeat. Mm-hmm. Now, is it the Deadbeats, a musical horror anthology? Was it for both volumes? I can't remember.
Yeah, for both volumes, we did them together.
So, listeners, if you guys get a chance, I have both volumes. You guys got it. Please pick that up. And Joe, correct me if I'm wrong. I know this is all off the cuff. It's the anthology is through A Wave Blue World. I'm pronouncing the company name correctly. Okay. All right. And then now Joe has also collaborated with Liana Kangas on She Said Destroy and TKO Shorts number one, Seeds of Eden. He's also mm-hmm. written a couple of comic book series for Mad Cave Studios as well. Beckstar mm-hmm. and Delilah in the Dark. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Dolly in the Dark. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then also too, I know you have also collaborated with the late Rachel Pollack. Now, listeners, Rachel, she did a run on the Vertigo series of Doom Patrol, and that was back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Her and Joe, they collaborated on the Never Ending Party. That is a Comixology original. Joe, yes. Is there anything else you want to add or you want listeners to check out?
I think you went over, you know, most of that. You know, I just add, I also edited Mad Cave's The Carmen Line graphic novel that okay. was written by Dennis Hopeless and illustrated by Pietro Kowalski. And I've also done some editing at Dynamite. I edited Cherish, which was written by Katana Collins with Gabriel Caetano on the art, and then, you know, just wrapped up editing the most recent Sheena miniseries at Dynamite as well. You know, so yeah, you know, looking forward to, you know, doing some more over at Dynamite as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Joe. Now,
Yeah, of course.
before we begin the interview, I want to give a big shout out to Frank Silva. He is the Mad Cave Studios Marketing and Communications Coordinator. Frank, thank you very much for setting up this interview and for giving me an advanced copy. Joe, would you like to add anything to that?
No, I mean, Frank's been great. He's been helpful, with me from basically the start. I believe he's been, helping with promotion since I was doing like Beckstar. I've gotten to meet him, at a couple shows as well. So, I appreciate, Frank and really everyone, across the board there. But marketing, they take, very seriously. I think Mad Cave is definitely one of the top publishers in terms of coordinating with creators on marketing and promoting their work.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, Joe, where can listeners follow you on social media?
So I am on Twitter or X and Blue Sky with at Joe Corallo, that's JoeCorallo, and on Instagram at Corallo Joe.
And then also, correct me if I'm wrong, you have a website too, right? Would you like to promote that?
Yeah, it's just a card portfolio website. So yeah, so give me one second here. Let me pull that up. Yes. Yeah. So it's just Joe Corallo dot card. That's CARRD dot CO. And that just has gives you a rundown on who I am, what I've done, and links on where you can grab some of my stuff, including the pre-order link for King Arthur and the Knights of Justice, as well as links to some of my earlier work, including She Said Destroy It Vault, that I so really everything in between there is covered.
All right, Joe, thank you very much. Now, we're just going to jump right into it. So, listeners, we're going to start talking about King Arthur and the Knights of Justice. Now, before I start asking Joe some questions, I just want to give basically the background of the property, and I'm going to let Joe talk about what the cartoon or the animated series, I should say, and his graphic novel. Now, this was an animated series back in the 90s. It was created by a Diane is Kent Scott, I butchered that name, from Golden Films, and of course Avi Arad. Now, he was the Toy Biz chairman and the CEO founder of Marvel Studios. Now, this series ran for 2 seasons, a total of 26 episodes. And then in 1995, there was a video game that kind of the that wrapped up the whole story of King Arthur and Morgana. They had their final battle in dragon form, and the story concludes where the Knights football team returns back to their own time. And of course, there was also, of course, action figures along with this series and a 3-part miniseries from Marvel Comics. Now, for me, I've only heard about this series because at this time when the series came out, I was already in my late 20s. I was already working, and I told Joe I can't remember if they ever showed it in Hawaii. If they did, it was always at weird times. So, Joe, now I read some information. You watched this series, right? When it first came out, is that correct?
Yeah, no, I watched it when it was airing on TV. I was a kid at the time. Because this would have been, like 93, 94, so I was like 8, 9 years old. I remember, I think it was on like Sunday mornings for me. But yeah, no, I remember watching that and really enjoying the show. And then I had gone back and watched episodes with the internet and all that, like digging through, and like I even showed a friend of mine like the pilot episode a few years ago. And then so yeah, I mean I hadn't played the video game, but no, I was very familiar with the property, and I also enjoy King Arthur sort of lore and mythology in general. Excalibur, the John Borman film, is a favorite of mine, so.
Oh God, yes. This is the perfect part where I'm going to ask you for listeners who don't know about this animated series or have some familiar idea of what it is. May I ask, can you tell us what the story is about and what is your story for this original graphic novel too?
Sure. So this story, with the animated series and all that, basically, Morgana's defeated King Arthur and the Knights of Justice, basically the Knights of the Round Table. There's a bunch of names that are like similar but not identical. So she's won, and now Merlin has to find 12 men who can work as one. That can fill that void and help save, the original King Arthur and his knights. So he finds this, contemporary American football team, and has them, basically fill in. No one really knows. Like they just like Guinevere, and everyone thinks that, that they just like either escaped or never really were, taken by Morgana, or she had failed. So it follows those exploits. With the show, there were keys, and they'd have to collect the keys. There was one key for each person to basically like unlock and restore them, which is a really good concept when you're working on doing a syndicated cartoon. Like if you want to have a long form show with a lot of potential to stretch for many seasons, that's a great plot device. But in doing this, we basically we're trying to do a reboot of the material, updated a bit, and went in a different direction from the keys, because it's that's conducive for dozens of episodes of a show, not so much when you're trying to tell a story in like 120 pages. So we made some choices to update things like that. It's the graphic novels for like a slightly older audience than the cartoon. I'd say that the cartoon's probably a bit more for that like 6 to 10, and this is a bit more for your like probably 12 to 18 or something like that, kind of. Not that there's like really like and to stretch that, it's a darker tone. There's violence, but there's no heavy language. There's no like nudity or sexuality or anything like that, really. Like in terms of sexual conduct or things like that. There's outside of, there's like kissing, but like yeah. So this, I do think it's probably appropriate for like even like a 10-year-old. I don't think there's really anything that's too over the top, but it's for people's discretion. So.
But I'm going to say it does, yes, and you do say it's a little bit of a darker tone. The other thing also too is that because it's you don't you see the sword fights, but you don't see like and then like sometimes I and correct me if I'm wrong, because I think in like some scenes all you would see is like there's some blood on the sword, but that's it's you have to have that, because if not, then because then the teenager are like, oh, come on, give me a break.
No, absolutely. Like
Puts down.
I think that's I think that stuff is important, but yeah, I specifically put in notes in the script that for some of the violence to do some more like silhouetted stuff in certain moments, and I was particularly drawing inspiration from, there's that one issue of Uncanny X-Men where Wolverine is just tearing the Hellfire Club members apart, and that's kind of the way they do it, where it's like it's like the silhouettes and like a red panel and things like that, and I wanted to evoke that in the book.
I know what scenes you're talking about, because then all of a sudden you can see the back of the Hellfire Club guard. Wolverine does his strike, and all you can just see, and it's red, but all you see is you can see the guy's shirt is like shredded. I know, okay. All right. Sorry, let's continue on, because if not, we're going to be talking about X-Men for the whole
Yeah, that's
view.
fine.
All right. So how did you and Mad Cave Studios team up for this series?
So I had already done a couple of books over there. I had done, Bexstar. I did Die in the Dark, and Bexstar happened because they had liked She Said Destroy that I did with Liana. And Liana has also done work with Mad Cave as well. And I had seen Chaz at Baltimore Comic Con in 2022, and I was basically like I had wrapped up more or less my scripting duties on Die in the Dark at that point, because Mad Cave does a very good job of like getting things done, ready in the can, beforehand, so that way there's really no delays or anything like that, or the delays are outside of getting it done, that might be printing or something like that. So I was talking to Chaz and was saying like, oh, if you any licenses or anything coming up, if you think I'd be a good fit, I'd be happy to throw my hat in the ring. And he had mentioned, well, did you ever watch, like Princess Guinevere and the Jewel Riders? And I was like, I never watched that, but I did watch King Arthur and the Knights of Justice. And I said that not knowing that they had recently acquired the license. So it was like, oh, okay, well, let's keep in touch with that. And we had further conversations, and it ended up leading to me getting the opportunity to write that book.
Oh, that's so cool. All right. I know you mentioned that, Excalibur is one of your favorite movies. You love King Arthur, the lore and stuff like that. How much research did you do for this book? Besides,
I
I
mean,
know you probably rewatched some of the episodes, right?
yeah. No, I mean, rewatch some of the episodes, and Grant Morrison's novel Luda had come out, and I had read that, and that also derived a lot from Arthurian myth. So some of that probably also seeped into the book. And just some of the myth in general, because I wanted to add some of these other elements, like Merlin getting sealed in the oak tree and all of that in the beginning, was more from like different like Arthurian myths. So and I do have a nice copy of like La Morte de Arthur that I'll go through and reference some things as well. But the main driving course in terms of research was rewatching the series and kind of building from there, and really wanting to focus on making the villains threatening, because I do think that people you're going into this book, and you probably feel like, well, I don't know how King Arthur is going to lose. It's called King Arthur and the Knights of Justice. So, like, it'd be a real bummer if you read this and they just lose to Morgana. So, but you have to take it as far as you can. You really have to elevate the threats. And so I really focused on that and making sure that if you're reading this, you think, maybe things aren't going to work out in the best, and they kind of don't work out the best in some aspects. I don't want to spoil
Oh no,
things,
yeah.
but there's a lot there's a lot to it. I wanted to have some layers to this and not have it too black and white, total victory and all of that. So I want that was important to me to have some twists and turns.
I know, yes, and we're not gonna spoil it. Before we continue on, because I want to ask you this off the cuff question: have you ever read the DC Maxi series Camelot 3000? This
I
team.
haven't read it in a very long time. So I definitely wasn't, I'm gonna need to like it's been on my list of things to like go back to, but but in that same line, I have read in the past few years, more recently, the Iron Man stories from 149,
Oh,
150, and then
yes.
249, 250. I have that like IDW put out that like artist selects
Yes.
line. So I have the Bob Layton one that has it like in like
Yes.
bigger than absolute size, and it's
Yes.
just gorgeous.
Yes. Wow. Oh my God. That sounds great. Oh my God. So, sorry, I just wanted to just comment real quick before we continue on. I'm so glad I found now. I know the now listeners, I know you guys can't see this audio. I got this. I picked up Camelot 3000 paperback. I found it at a used bookstore, very good condition for $5. Oh,
Nice.
yes. All right. Okay. Sorry, Joe, we're gonna continue on. So
Yeah.
how'd you team up with your artist? And I'm gonna try to pronounce their name. I know I'm gonna butcher it.
You're good.
Gaia Cardinelli.
Yeah, that's close. I think it's Gaia Cardinelli, yeah. But
Okay.
she had worked on In the Shadow of the Throne the previous year at Maverick,
Oh.
which was another fantasy like sword and sorcery type book. So she ended up just being such a perfect fit.
Yes.
So that was one of those cases. There wasn't really casting for that book because it was like, oh, well, what about her? Yeah, that's great. Her schedule worked out, so there wasn't too much in terms of trying to figure that out. And she did color it all herself as well. The way the process for the book went was it would be layouts, then go once the layouts were approved, like right into like the inks and then the colors. So it was like sort of this like three-step process for her with the book.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, because I love the armor designs that she did. It was it's very good. Now were these were the armor designs and the costume, were they similar to the animated series?
Yes, they're very similar. Honestly, there's only very little in terms of, I'm not saying this to diminish the work she did. She put a lot of work into it. I'm just saying, like, aesthetically, there's very little in terms of like overhauling the designs. They're pretty close to what they were for the main characters. There are some new designs in there. That are a bit more of an overhaul with some of the more ancillary characters, but for the most part, the armors are adjusted slightly, make it maybe more aesthetically aligned to some of the stuff that comes out now, but still very toyetic, still very much like the show. I think if you're watching the show, you'd recognize these right away. You wouldn't think there was really any changes, and there really aren't. So,
Okay. But yes, I love Arthur's armor. And I love Lord Viper's helmet. Oh, that's so
yes. Yeah, Lord Viper is great.
Before I continue on, may I ask, can you who are some of your characters in this book? I mean, we already talked about we already know about Merlin, Morgana.
Sure.
We're gonna ask about Arthur King. And if you can talk about Lance and Breeze and also Gallop too as well.
Yeah, no, I mean there's a ton of characters in this. So
Yes.
like it's King Arthur and his knights. That's 12 characters alone. And there's a lot of particular focus on, Lance, Breeze, and Gallop, which you've mentioned. But basically Arthur in this, Arthur King, he's the quarterback of the football team they're on. Then the rest of the knights are all members of the football team. So, Lance, Breeze, and Gallop are all on the team. Gallop's more of like the hothead, and then Lance is a bit more reserved, and Breeze is a bit more gregarious. In this version, there's very little in terms of changing any of the characters from the cartoon. Other than in this version, Lance and Breeze are in a relationship. It's it's touched on, but it's not really, it was important for me that it's a matter of fact in the book, and there's some reference to it, but it's not just it, that there's more to it than that. It's not just, oh, we're just going to keep mentioning it. It's just that this is just a matter of fact thing
Yeah,
going on. Yeah.
because I'm gonna say that's a perfect segue, because the thing, one of the scenes I love in the story is when the Knights won the championship football. If correct me if I'm wrong, it's like a championship football game, right?
Yeah,
And
they win a get an important game. Yeah.
a sports writer comes up to them, and he asks Arthur, the quarterback, and we're in the Latin Breeze, they're the two, are two stars on the football team. The journalist asks, how does two of his star players who are dating impact the team's dynamic? And Arthur responds, quote, we operate as a team equal on the field. And that was pretty good. I love that. That was great. She goes, yeah, whatever
Thank
happened
you.
off the field, that's off the field. That's that, but on the field, we work as a team. The other thing I also liked too was, how Arthur just goes over to them and he puts his arms around them, over their shoulders, like, hey, come on, guys, right? Because it just shows, hey, we're friends, we're teammates. Let's come on, let's we gotta go, let's head to the locker rooms, and so forth. And what I loved about that is that it showed, one, Arthur as a leader who stands behind his men, and two, that these are his friends, and like you said, it's just data, as a matter of fact, and that's it. I'm gonna ask, would you like to add anything to that?
No, I think it was I like doing that scene. Like Lauren, like my editor on this book, who was a pleasure to work with, had a suggested not that exact scene, but was like, oh, and we should do like something along these lines, and that's sort of the scene I come up with from that. I thought that was a good way, because that's I wanted it to be presented in a way that was something like logical that you could understand someone asking, that wasn't necessarily like too offensive, and something that could be handled in a way that could just be sort of quickly handled and sort of move on from there, and not linger on that. There's very little lingering on it other than like brief mention from Lance, like about all that. But just establish it, move on, because I think people like that, because there is something legitimate about that, this idea of like like, oh well, if people are dating, does people get special treatment and stuff like that? So I wanted it to be something that came from, a good and sort of understandable place, but that could still be used as a moment to show Arthur, doing right by, his team.
No, thank you very much. I want to also point out too, there is another scene in the book that I also kind of it's kind of I love, where it's also sort of almost like this, like, whatever happens off the field, that's off the field, but if we're on the field, we operate as a team. And it's a scene where I think when the team is first transported back to King Arthur's time, and I think it was Gallop who started to, hey, he starts making a little protest and stuff like that. And I think Merlin was the one who said, it's okay to have differences now, but as long as you work together as a team on the battlefield. And I kind of like that. I love that reference again too. That was a great.
Thank you. No, I thought that stuff was important to establish. It's Because you want there to be, you want to help people suspend their disbelief. You want to, and you think a situation like this, like, of course, there are going to be people who are going to react
Yes.
negatively to, traveling through time or whatever that, like,
Yes.
that's a big,
Yes.
that's like a traumatic sort of thing. So you want to have that balance of acknowledge that this is a crazy sort of traumatic
Yes.
thing, but that's not what the book is about. So you want to, like, acknowledge it. Move on. And so that can be a bit of a tightrope to walk, but it's part of the job. So
And also too, and I just thought about this. What I love about it too is that, again, it's they're a team, and when whatever it's the football game or they have to go into battle against Morgana and her army, they work as a team together. So that, like I said, that I just thought that was a just a nice kind of sort of reference again later in the book.
Yep, thank you.
The final page in this book is very important. May I ask if you can talk about that?
I can't go on about the final page, but there are twists and turns, and we definitely take things that I think in a direction that if you were a fan of the show, or even if you're not and you're just reading the book, fresh start. I think we pull off taking things in a direction that a lot of people aren't going to see coming, and it culminates, at the very end. So I'll leave it at that. I hope that that provides the kind of entertainment that people want out of a good graphic novel. So.
All right. Thank you. I'm sorry, I forgot to write this one question on here.
No worries.
Actually, I should have clarified a little bit more. Actually, there's a one more page at the end of the book about our resources. Do you want to talk about that?
So, which page again are you
The
referencing? It's
resources, the ones
the
I think.
resources, yeah.
The ones where I think it was like, if you need someone to talk to.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's I mean, sort of the, again, like I'm always wary to talk about, like sort of the towards the end of the book kind of stuff. But you are dealing with time displacement and figuring out where people should go. We do handle certain things. I'll kind of use this as a way to dovetail to some of the other aspects of the book, since I mentioned earlier how in the original cartoon, people didn't let like the they replaced the original King Arthur and the Knights of Justice, and no one really knows. We play with that a little bit in this book, where like maybe some people are going to figure it out sooner than they
Yes.
did or later than they did, and things like that. So that was definitely important to me. And Morgana does a lot of pretty nefarious things throughout the book,
Yes.
all the way through the end,
Yes.
and displays a certain power, in some ways that maybe isn't necessarily seen in the show. And writing her and Lord Viper, both of them, as just as evil and cunning as possible, was a real thrill. I really enjoyed the dialogue for both of them, and getting to do that kind of over the top grandiose
Oh, yes.
stuff, which they continue, right through,
Yes.
the end of the book. So.
That was great. Are there other members of the creative team that you want to give shout outs to?
I mean, definitely, everyone. I mean, again, Guy did a fantastic job. There was so little in terms of oh, you know, like this layout here, it might not work. So what if we try this or that, like for a couple of pages, and that was it. You know, just working together on, you know, hammering out something that was going to make the most sense. But you know, I mean, so few notes. She did a phenomenal job. You know, would absolutely work with her again in a heartbeat. You know, and Chaz lettering it, he was also a you know, fan of the show growing up, so to have him letter that was great. I'd worked it with him in an editing capacity. He edited, you know, towards the end of Dahlia in the Dark, you know, which was great. So to ha work with him on that. And he had played you know, football in his youth, so he was able, you know, him and Mike Martz was a big football fan. So, you know, they were able to kind of help me not, you know, completely embarrass myself in a as I'm a pretty casual watcher. So, you know, I don't necessarily know all the ins and outs for different you know, plays. So they were able to, you know, help with that. So definitely wanted to acknowledge that. And again, Lauren, you know, sort of had this you know, vision for what this property should be, you know, moving forward, and did all of the you know, she's the one who's working directly, like with the licensors for approval and liaisoning with them directly. You know, I don't, you know, talk to them directly, so she does all that heavy lifting. She has to do all those meetings and this and that, while I get to do the writing, and that's a lot of, you know, that's a lot of work. You know, that can, you know, really eat up, you know, a lot of work time, because, you know, Lauren is an editor. That wasn't her only book, so you know, having to like liaise between all this and that for all these other properties within Maverick, you know, is a lot. And she's very, you know, passionate, and is looking for, you know, places to promote and this and that, and what to do to elevate it. She's helped, what was it, she had some friends who do a podcast and had me on that some months ago as well. Was very excited to make that happen. You know, her enthusiasm is definitely going to be part of what will hopefully make this book successful.
I'm going to ask one final question about the book before I start wrapping things up. I know you
Sure.
said you're a fan of the animated series. How excited were you when you got the call to do this?
Oh no, I was very excited. It was you know, 'cause this was really beyond just getting to work on something that I was legitimately a fan of growing up. You know, that's always you know, something great. But you know, getting to do that and getting to an opportunity to you know, not only do that, like to prove yourself, to prove to myself that I could, you know, write these sort of like licensed characters and these and that King Arthur and the Knights of Justice is a unique property, not only in that, you know, this was this like 90s cartoon that I grew up with, but King Arthur is also this just well-known mythological character, and all, so many of the characters in this book are all, you know, derived from that. And there's this opportunity to get new fans that, you know, people who aren't even aware there was a cartoon, that this is a reboot of a franchise, because it's King Arthur, they know King Arthur. So I think there's a unique opportunity here to expand the reach of this franchise through this book. So I'm excited to see that and how that goes as well.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. What is your next convention or store appearance in the upcoming months?
So the next big one is going to be C2E2, and the book is coming out the week of C2E2. So the book premieres on April 24th, and C2E2 is the 26th to the 28th. So, Mad Cave will have a presence there. We'll be, promoting the book. So definitely if you're going to C2E2, I love that show in big parts because I just love Chicago. It's a great city. So that's and Chicago in late April is a great time to be in Chicago. So it's warm enough. So
It's
that's
not too,
always
it's
great.
not snow, it's not, there's no huge snow blizzards.
Yeah, no, for sure. So that's good. But in terms of smaller shows, I am going to be walking around Mocha Fest in New York this weekend. This probably won't be up by then.
Yeah, sorry.
But no, it's fine. I don't have a table there or anything. I'm just going to be walking around. But so people know they missed me at Mocha Fest. But other small shows. I'll be at in May is a Cradle Con in Long Island. So I'll be tabling there. So I'll have copies of King Arthur for that show as well. I'll be walking around Heroes Con.
Oh,
It's
okay.
gonna
Oh,
be, yeah, it's gonna be my first time going. I've never done Heroes Con before.
I've heard
So
good things, yes.
yeah, I've only heard good things. So I'm looking forward to checking that out. Richard Case does that show every year. I'm a big Richard Case fan. I always love any time I get to hang out with him. So hopefully I'll be able to spend some time with him. Maybe grab a bike because he knows he'll know restaurants over there better than I do. So that'll be fun. And then I'll definitely be at FlameCon in August in New York. I'll be at New York Comic Con. I'll be at Baltimore Comic Con. Like, so those are all happening. I'm gonna try to see about, a couple other shows here and there. I know there are some like smaller shows that pop up in the greater New York area. So yeah, and I should be at Fourth World Comics on Long Island for Free Comic Book Day, for at some point. So there will be a chance to see me there too.
All right. Any closing words to our listeners?
If you haven't, if you're interested in King Arthur and the Knights of Justice, I believe it's streaming the original show on Peacock,
Yes.
and the first season is also available on Tubi, which is a free streaming service. At least in the US. I can't speak for the rest of the world, but definitely if you want to check that out. If you're again interested in my other work, you can go to my card website. You could look me up on on different social media platforms. And I'll also say, because it was announced yesterday, so I'll just also plug real quick that I do have a story in the Rachel Pollack tribute that's coming out on June 6th through DC. It's mostly reprint of her work, Doom Patrol number 70, and her Brother Power the Geek one shot she did with Mike Allred. But there's going to be a new story in there focusing on Coagula by myself. Rye Hickman is doing all of the art, including the colors, just everything. And which we had first collaborated together in Deadbeat's musical horror anthology. So this is going to be our second collaboration, which I'm thrilled about. And it's going to be lettered by John Workman, a legend in the industry who lettered Rachel Pollack's entire Doom Patrol run, as well as Grant's Simonson, Walt Simonson's Thor run. And you could go on and on. John Workman's one of the best, so it's an honor to be able to collaborate with him on that.
Joe, mahalo. Thank you in Hawaiian. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for giving me another opportunity to interview you. I wish you all the success with the King Arthur and the Knights of Justice original graphic novel. I also want to thank Frank of Mad Cave Studios for help setting up this interview and providing me with an advanced reading copy. So, Frank, thank you very much. Now, if you are a new comic book reader or a lifelong comic book reader who loves The Legend of King Arthur. Please check out King Arthur and the Knights of Justice. It's a young adult original graphic novel from Mad Cave Studios. And as Joe said, it comes out on April 24th. Now, I'm a long-time reader. I refuse to call myself old. I read this story. I told Joe I enjoyed it. I loved it because it was a nice, fun adventure to read. So, listeners, if you guys get a chance, check it out. And if you are a teenager who loves to read comics or also too, I love the art style. The art style kind of and Joe, you can correct me if I'm this, but the art style kind of reminded me a little bit, had a little bit of the manga vibe to it. So I thought that was pretty good. And I know what I've heard is I think most teenagers nowadays are reading manga stuff right now. Teenagers, if you love reading comics, or manga, please consider, checking this original graphic novel out. And Joe, I just thought of this. It is so good that you and Mad Cave have team up to bring this property, bring this property, basically, right, during this time, because this is a property that could have been lost, quote unquote, could have been lost in time. It was made in the 90s. It's not that it's great that you guys, brought it back for a new audience to enjoy. So, like I said, and again, listeners, like I said, I read it. I thought it was fun, a great adventure to read. I want to thank Drew,
Thank
the
you.
host of. I just want to thank Drew, the host of Comics for Fun and Profit, for putting this episode together. Drew, thank you very much for all your hard work behind the scenes. And if you are a new listener, please check out new episodes of Comics for Fun and Profit that comes out every Saturday. I want to thank you, the listeners. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for listening to this episode. Until next time, guys. Aloha.
Our LCS is Cowabunga Comics out of Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, and their mail order company, Deep Discount Comics. And we went there, and we're actually invoice number 00001. We were the very first, their very first customer, which was kind of cool. They've been nothing short of fantastic, customer service wise, discounts. They were very close, if not the same or better than DCBS on a lot of things. Over and above, customer service wise, always taking care of us, going the extra mile, so responsive, getting instantaneous responses back to questions about things, and to the point where knowing the stuff you like and anticipating your needs and having it suggested to that you might want to add this to your order already before you even have to think about it. That's kind of cool. Really quality experience. So we love working with Cowabunga and Deep Discount, and that's why they're in our show notes every single episode and have been for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of episodes that we leave them there because we like them. They're cool, good people. That's why they're in there. By God, they'd tell you to, if you've got a local comic book shop that you love, stay with them because everybody needs to support their local comic shops. But if you're looking, check them out. You can check them out in the show notes. There's plenty of ways to get a hold of them. Either get on their list just so you can check and see what kind of FOC and pre-order stuff they have and the discounts, and they'll send it to you each month, get you on that email list. And you can check out their shop because they have a great shop of exclusive Cowabunga variants, amazing stuff. Yes, they've always been there for us, and we take them for granted. So, there you go. Now you know.